Thank you, Mark. Thank you, folks. Thank you. Thanks very much. I apologize for being a few minutes late. I spent some time last night thinking about these remarks, and it occurred to me that that you are some of the most important people to the future of not just American agriculture, but to the rural economy. And that the seed association and the seed industry is critically important and central to the success of rebuilding and revitalizing a rural economy. Some of this may be obvious. Clearly, the seed industry has been responsible for an extraordinary increase in productivity in American agriculture, which has allowed us to meet not just our own domestic needs, but now to begin a process of exporting American exceptionalism in agriculture around the world. And it's allowed us to fuel an increase in exports that over the last 6 years, 7 years, has reached record levels, helping not only to stabilize prices and farm income, but also to help support over 1 million jobs here at home. And certainly the conversation we are continuing to have in Washington, D.C. about the expansion of exports and the opportunities that potential trade agreements could mean for American agriculture will continue to put pressure on the seed industry to continue to allow us to figure out ways to be more productive with a very, very challenging climate. But you're more than just that. You're also critically important to the expansion of the local and regional food systems that we're creating in this country, which have been very much dependent on fruit and vegetable and specialty crop production. Again, the seed industry has an important role to play in making sure that we have adequate supplies for the ever-expanding number of farmers' markets and food hubs and schools that are using our farm-to-school program and schools that are now selling and providing more fruits and vegetables for children to improve their health. Seed industry is critically important to that initiative and that effort, and it's now a multi-billion-dollar part of American agriculture. It is also growing at record levels. The seed industry is also extraordinarily important to our conservation efforts. It isn't just the benefits of conservation to soil health and water quality, which are important. It's also the economic engine that conservation provides when we expand habitat, improve landscapes, encourage more outdoor recreation, and now with the opportunities that ecosystem markets are creating, hundreds of millions of dollars being invested in conservation in order to obtain some environmental benefit that's important to a regulated industry or is important to the protection of habitat that in turn allows landowners not to be restricted in the way in which they use their land. The seed industry is critically important to that. Something's got to be planted in those buffer strips. Something has to be planted in order for that cover crop to do its job of conserving and preserving soil and improving water quality and maintaining scarce water resources. So critically important to the conservation efforts, which are also now at record levels, is the seed industry. And finally, today and this week, we are acknowledging the important role that the bio-based economy is playing in the rural economy. Issued a report yesterday that identified the $369 billion effort that the bio-based economy now represents, over 4 million jobs in the U.S., supported by this notion that you can take what you grow and what you raise and you can convert it into a wide variety of products, chemicals and enzymes, textiles, fuels, energy. All of that requires something to be planted and grown and harvested. So the combination of production agriculture and exports, local and regional food systems, conservation, and the bio-based economy forms the network of a new rural economy. It takes fuller advantage of our natural resource advantages in rural areas and helps to create new manufacturing,
processing and refining jobs in rural communities. And it comes at an extraordinarily important time because we see great competition for the bright young people who are being born and raised and educated in rural communities across the United States. So I wanted to first and foremost acknowledge the important role that you all play in helping us to begin to build this new rural economy, because it's important to the country. It's important because it's where most of our food comes from. It's important because it's where most of the water that we consume is impacted. Almost all the energy that we have in this country that is domestically produced is a result of activities in rural America, and it's the place where all of us who live in cities go to recreate when we want to get away from it all. It's an important place. And we need to make sure that young people have the opportunity to call rural America home or to come back to a home they may have left. It's also, as I say in every speech that I give, it's also the place that disproportionately serves our country in terms of military service. 16% of America's population, sometimes somewhere between 35 and 40% of America's military, comes from rural America. The value system that's critically important to the greatness of America is centered in those rural communities. And so what you do and the impact that you have on our ability to rebuild and revitalize this economy cannot be understated. So first, a thank you. Second, a request. Critically important for us to be able to maintain this innovative edge that we're now creating in this country is the ability to help you help us come up with new and creative ways to do what we do. And you all understand and appreciate the importance of research. None of you would be here without it. And one would think, given the need for America to remain competitive, given the fact that we have great universities, given the fact that we've committed for over 150 years the important role of our land-grant universities, one would think that we would look for ways to support research both privately and publicly. But the sad reality is that the current Congress is looking at a budget for the United States Department of Agriculture that's $3.3 billion less than it was when I first became secretary. The first full budget that the President submitted and that was passed by Congress is a full $3.3 billion more than what Congress is now considering for the budget for USDA starting October 1st. And a good portion of that reduction has come from research. Our research facilities at ARS, our efforts at ERS, our surveying at NASS, and our National Institute of Food and Agriculture efforts in NIFA. So we need the seed association and the seed industry to encourage our friends in Congress to understand the importance of research, the need for that combination of both public and private research in this space. It's simply not enough to pass a farm bill and create a new research foundation and provide $200 million for that foundation and have it matched by another $200 million or $300 million from the private sector and say, we've done our job. Support for research needs to be an ongoing commitment. There's probably not a company in this room that hasn't made a significant commitment to research and hasn't made it over year after year after year after year. And it has probably taken that long for the innovations that have created the companies in this room to take hold. So it can't just be a one-off opportunity. It has to be a long-term commitment. And I certainly appreciate the importance of other aspects of our economy and the research that needs to take place in things like healthcare. But fundamentally, it all starts with our ability to feed our people. It all starts with our ability to maintain a vibrant rural economy. And critically important to that is your industry, and critically important to your industry is research. So I would certainly hope that you all take a look at all this, understand it, and if you have a chance to educate our friends in Congress about the importance of research and investing in it. And the last thing I want to say is that United States Department of Agriculture is absolutely committed to continuing to work to figure out ways in which we can make it easier for you to do what you do. As new seed varieties are established, as regulations are requiring a review, we're looking for ways in which we can accelerate the process so that we can get these new innovations to market as quickly as we can. I'm proud of the work that we've done in this space in the last several years. I think when I first became secretary, it took us about 900 days or so for regulatory approval of some of the biotech traits and events. We're now at a period that's about 15 months, significantly less, and we're continuing to look for ways to improve that process, and we're not only encouraging our own folks to look at this, but we're also encouraging people all over the world to look at creative and innovative ways to reduce the processing time without sacrificing the quality of the review. We know how important it is to have a synchronized regulatory process so that as new traits, new events, new opportunities are created, that there is an opportunity for them to participate fully, not just in the U.S. market, but the international market. So thank you. Please help. And we're going to continue to work hard. Now, I've got more to my speech, but I've been told that I'm supposed to open this up for questions, and so you have a choice. You can either ask questions, or I can kind of repeat what I just said. So let's try the questions first. We've got a microphone, and the lights are kind of bright, so...
Yes, Secretary, thank you for coming to our meeting today. I represent the Environmental Conservation Committee, and we've been active in the pollinator health and pollinator nutrition and forage activities represented by ASDA and Honeybee Health Coalition. What we've noticed is in the rural landscape, we've seen a decline in the CRP program, the CP42 practice, which is authorized 100,000 acres for honeybee health or for pollinator health, is kind of stuck at about 29,000 acres. What do you see as the vision from the department as far as how we can increase the availability of forage for the pollinators in the landscapes, whether we're talking honeybees, monarchs, native bees? Just like to get your comments.
Well, the administration is very committed to this, and I can tell you that one of the most surprising conversations I've had with the president was in the Oval Office about a year or so ago when he asked me to come in just to catch up. And at the end of my conversation with him about a variety of items, he asked me whether he wouldn't mind if he asked me a question off topic. Of course, I thought to myself, he's the President of the United States. He could, of course, ask me whatever he wants. He said, I'm concerned about the bees. And he went on to express concern about the impact that the reduction in the number of hives that we've seen, he wanted to know what was causing it. And I said, Mr. President, this is a complicated issue. There's no one single issue here. There are a variety of causes. Some folks obviously focus on pesticides. That's part of it. Some folks focus on parasites. That's part of it. Some people will talk about the stress of transporting those hives from place to place. That's part of it. And some folks will look at the lack of diversity in some parts of the country in terms of crops and say, that's part of it. And the reality is that's probably all of it needs to be discussed. So based on that, the president instructed us to put together a task force, and we just recently concluded the task force effort with a report that focuses on a couple of things, which is responding to your question. One is we've got to do a better job of getting people involved in this and to understand the importance of it, understand the significance of the lack of monarchs, the lack of bees has to the overall capacity for us to produce what we enjoy, this extraordinary diversity of fruits and vegetables and nuts that we take for granted in this country. So part of what we're going to do to try to increase activity in this space is to increase public awareness. So if you walked into my office today, you could not get out of my office without me offering you a packet of pollinator seeds. We have 400,000 packets that Burpee Seed Company has, in partnership with USDA and NRCS, is donating. So we're in the process of providing these packets as a way of pushing the message and getting the public engaged. Secondly, we will continue to press and promote the pollinator actions of CRP. You're going to continue to see efforts within CRP to focus on ways in which we can create greater crop diversity and encourage, through the way in which we finance and pay for CRP acres. That's why we recently announced an expansion of some of the continuous sign-up programs, why we announced a general sign-up. It is true that Congress has made it a little more difficult for us in terms of CRP by limiting the number of acres that we can put into the program, but we're going to try to focus those acres in a way that has the greatest impact on pollinators, on habitat, on water resources, on ways in which we can focus on highly erodible land. There's also a research component here. So you'll see more activity on the part of our research efforts, both internal and external, that will focus on pollinators, on the stresses, on their causes, on their reasons, in an effort. Finally, with reference to our own public lands, you'll see the Department of Interior with BLM land and the Forest Service at USDA look for ways in which it can also enhance acres committed to pollinator habitat on public lands. So with increased access to public lands, focus on public education, continued effort with some of our conservation programs, and expanded research opportunities, we think over time we'll see hopefully an improvement in pollinators and therefore sustain our capacity to continue to produce this amazing diversity that we enjoy.
Right. Regulatory environment?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep. So as you mentioned, a synchronized regulatory environment is very important. Can you speak specifically to USDA's efforts with China?
Oh, do I have to? Look, every meeting I have with a Chinese official, this issue is brought up. And I think it's important for us to understand why this is a difficult issue for them. I think in the past, our approach has been to try to explain to them the benefits that we see in the U.S. to a synchronized process. I think we say to them, boy, because you guys are inconsistent, because you have a process that appears more political than policy-driven, it creates uncertainty in our market, it plugs up the pipeline for new innovation. And can't you see that it would be helpful to us if you would just at least start your process at the same time we start ours? I don't know that that's a particularly persuasive argument. I think we have to understand why they are where they are, and I think we have to speak to their self-interest. So we are trying to convey to them that this is about their capacity to be as productive as they are capable, helping their farmers, helping their consumers, helping their industry be more innovative, more creative, more productive. There are a number of underlying societal tensions and pressures in China that sort of intersect with this issue. It's not just simply get your regulations in order, synchronize your activities. You have the ability to do this. I think that to a certain extent, they are faced with this enormous urbanization that's taking place in their country. And if that pace of urbanization is accelerated because you don't require as many farmers to produce a lot more, similar to what has happened in the U.S., that pace of urbanization will accelerate beyond their capacity to manage it. So there is, I think, an effort on their part to balance all of this, to maintain, from their perspective, political stability. I think we are confronted with a messaging issue as well. There are some in China who believe that the reason we're pushing all of this and encouraging and advocating is because we want to, quote, westernize China. And there is a natural cultural opposition to that notion. So again, we have to overcome that by saying, no, this isn't about westernizing China. That can't be done. That's not our job. Our job is to make sure that we work with you to meet the demand of food and food production with a climate that continues to challenge us and a world population that continues to increase that will demand more and more, and the evolution of middle classes in Asia that in turn will increase the need for more agricultural production, and that there's plenty of opportunity for everybody here. So we'll continue to make that case. We'll continue to work with the China-U.S. Business Alliance so that they're not hearing it just from U.S. officials or U.S. company people or business people. They're hearing it from their own folks. They're hearing it from their own business people. They're hearing it from their own agricultural interests so that there's a consistent message. And it's not just from us they should hear this. So I've reached out to a Brazilian ag minister. I've reached out to the Canadian ag minister as an example of suggesting that we need to convey for all of us who believe in biotechnology, for example, we need to convey a consistent message internationally so that they understand that this is not just the U.S. This is their friends in South America. It's their friends in Canada. It's a real effort here internationally. So we're going to continue that approach. I think President Xi is cognizant of the importance of agriculture. I think he's committed to it. That is why we took the step in December last year at the JCCT of suggesting that perhaps we needed to have more in-depth conversations from a technical perspective so that if there was a concern about the maturity of their regulatory process versus our regulatory process, or the maturity of our science versus their science, that we could alleviate any concerns that they have that we're somehow taking advantage of them. So we suggested a strategic dialogue. We've submitted an agenda, and that dialogue, I'm hopeful, will take place sometime in the summer or early fall, so beginning a process of having conversations at multiple levels, not just minister to minister, but scientists to scientists, farm groups to farm groups, business leaders to business leaders, international allies providing the same message, and the consistency of that message and the constant nature of that message and the comprehensive nature of that message, we hope over time will convince them it's in their best interest to embrace a regulatory system and process that's more synchronized. But I think if we were to simply say, hey, you should do this because it's plugging up the pipeline in our company, you know, that may be true, but I don't think that's a particularly persuasive argument for them. It's an argument for me to make more arguments to them about figuring out a way to crack the code here, but it's something we're very focused on. And we're also focused on making sure that there begins to have a much more earnest conversation internationally about the underlying foundation for these new technologies. The reality is with global trade, there's going to be mixing and mingling, and as testing systems become more sophisticated, it's going to be harder and harder to commit to you that a shipment is 100% this or that. And coming up with a way in which we could have a uniform definition, if you will, of acceptable levels of low-level presence, I think will also be helpful over time, because it's too easy to say this shipment had 0.000x of something, and therefore we're going to reject the whole shipment. So conversations take place and will continue. But it's not an easy it's not an easy issue for them.
Mr. Secretary, you commented the importance of research to this group. You acknowledged that. Along with that, it's very important to this group that we continue to have the modern and innovative tools of plant breeding. We're concerned as we look across to Europe that they're wanting to restrict and regulate plant breeding tools over there. Can you comment on the department's position and this administration's position on new plant breeding techniques?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to give you a good answer. I will tell you that we are internally looking at our processes within our own research operations to ensure that all varieties, if you will, all options are remain open, that we're not committed to one type of process or one type of crop production system. We want to make sure that we have adequate supplies of all types of seeds, for example, so that something happens in one area of the country and we want to replant or start something new, that we are able to do it. So we are taking a look at our own internal operations to make sure that we're not focusing too much on one and not on the scope. I will tell you that our conversations with our European friends have been interesting in terms of trade discussions, and this is a little far afield for your question, but I think it speaks a little bit to it. We are very concerned about the attitude that the EU has about biotechnology generally, and very concerned about the most recent proposal that has yet to be voted on by member states, which would suggest that each member state has the ability to say yay or nay in terms of not just access to biotech with feed, but also cultivation. And what's surprising to me is that some member states that you would think might be opposed or are supportive of that are concerned about it because it may have a negative impact on their livestock industry, for example, on the feed side. And we're trying to get them to acknowledge the need for not 26 or 28 different decisions on this, but if you want an EU agreement, there has to be an EU approach as opposed to a 26 or 28 member approach. We're not there yet in those conversations and discussions. You know, I think that what I'm interested in is maintaining diversity. I want to make sure that, and when I say diversity, I mean diversity across the board. Diversity in terms of new innovative approaches versus maintaining some of the old ways of doing things, because that's important, very important. Diversity in terms of organic, conventional biotechnology, all of it has to be available. That's why we spent a lot of time on coexistence and thankful for the work that the Seed Association has been doing with us in trying to make sure that everyone's process, everyone's production method, everyone's farming tech is respected and understood as important. Diversity in terms of the size of operations. Diversity in terms of crops that are produced on land, back to the pollinator issue. And diversity in terms of who's actually doing the farming. You know, I'm concerned about the fact the average age of farmer in America is 58 and continuing to age. It won't make any difference. We have all the great innovations in the world. It won't make any difference if we have all the conservation techniques. We don't have anybody to farm. That's a problem. So we are looking for ways in which we can encourage the next generation of farmers, returning veterans, women, people of color, to be engaged in the farming business, making it easier for them to get involved. So it's diversity across the board. And that would include plant breeding approaches, making sure that we don't put all of our eggs, I mean, with AI, it's probably not a good, whatever the phrase would be, we don't just focus on one way of doing business. We want every way to be available. We want options. We want diversity. We want innovation. We want creativity. We want new ideas. But we also want to preserve the old way of doing things because that's important. And, you know, there's a market. There's a terrific market in organic. There's a terrific market there. And I think what's happened over the last 5 or 6 years is there's been an appreciation and acknowledgement of that being an integral part of agriculture in America, and it needs to be, and it needs to be an integral part of agriculture across the board. At the same time, it is also important for us to recognize our responsibility to feed the world, and to the extent that we can do so with technology, and we can do it with less chemicals and less pesticides and less water, maintaining the health of our soil, then we obviously ought to be looking at those techniques as well. So, but you folks are at the center of this, and I'll finish where I started with a thank you. You are at the center of this. It does not happen without you. None of it happens. The exports don't happen. The production doesn't happen. The response to climate change doesn't happen. The local and regional food system doesn't happen. The conservation doesn't happen. The bio-based economy doesn't happen without your work. So that's why I'm here today, to say thank you and to keep up the good work. Thank you all very much.